We have exciting news for you. Past guest Brother Aiden, the Knitting Monk, will be hosting a week-long fiber arts retreat in May of 2020 with the amazing fiber artists Christy Johnson, Kenya Miles, and Katrina Rodebach.
Reserve your place before November 1st and mention Love to Sew, and you'll get $50 off their suggested donation. Reserve with a friend before November 1st and mention Love to Sew, and you'll each get $100 off. Visit holycrossmonastery.com/events/fiber for more info about this event. That's holycrossmonastery.com/events/fiber. And now, on to the show. Da 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 da. Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are answering your questions about fabric. How to choose the right fabric? How to care for your fabric? Does the green line even matter? We cover all this and more in today's fabric Q&A.
Does the green line matter, really?
People it are does, asking you guys. That. It matters.
Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Helen.
How's it going?
So good. How are you?
I'm great. It's full on summer in Vancouver and I feel very summery.
It is. We had a little bit of rain, a little bit of gloom there for a little bit.
Yeah, it got dark there for a couple weeks.
And the clouds parted.
Yeah.
Oh, the sun came out.
It did. It did. And I've been doing a lot of sewing lately.
Yes.
Which has been really fun. I made two things from the new closet case collection, and I made a True Bias Shelby dress all in the last week. I'm feeling on top of the world.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Don't worry, you'll get to try them on after we finish
recording.
That's
all I'm thinking about is like, are they here? Can I try them on? That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun. What have you been up to?
I've also been sewing a lot lately. I sewed myself a Wixton shift dress to wear to a party this past weekend.
That's the perfect thing to wear to a party.
It was great. I shared some photos on my personal Instagram. I love this dress. I wore it to the party. I like saved it for the party and then I wore it for like 3 days after the party.
Your assistant Natasha was wearing one at a workshop that I taught at Blackbird last week and she looked amazing, and it's you guys are selling me on it.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think I have to do it.
Yeah, she's wearing today at the office, she was wearing another version in like a brick colored linen gauze.
Ooh.
So nice.
Yeah,
we're gonna share it on the Blackbird feed at some point this week.
There's nothing better than an oversized sack in the summer.
Oh yeah, nothing touching your body.
Yeah,
ideal. What else is new with you?
Very exciting news this week. If you're interested in any of our patterns over at Helen's Closet, we're having an anniversary sale.
Yay!
So our entire line is 20% off this week. No code required. It's all marked down on the site. So I encourage you to go check it out. See if there's anything you're interested in. And it would mean so much to me if you guys would try one of my designs.
Yes. Yeah. Go try the Ashton top.
Yes. That has been a new fan favorite for sure. And we have some really exciting hacks coming out for that one too. So we're going to make it one of those patterns that can just be transformed into anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I love.
Also have been obsessed with wearing my Yantas. They're the most comfortable overalls ever. And I feel like super cool in them. They make me feel like a cool artist.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of compliments on them?
I do.
I find when I wear mine, people like come up to me on the street, like asking about them.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh yeah. They're because they look so like comfy yet cool at the same time. So people are like, where can I buy a pair?
Because the overalls trend is so hot right now and I see everyone wearing them, but there's a wide range in fitting well, styling well, like there's just so many different variations out there, and of course it depends on what you prefer in your overalls, but
I love the like looser silhouette. I think it's super cool. I can't wait to make a linen version. My version is like a cotton twill. So anyways, go buy all the patterns.
Thank you.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we've been blogging for 4 years and in business for 3. So very exciting.
That is awesome.
It seems like a short amount of time when I say it like that.
But and yet you've accomplished so much in such a short amount of time.
Thank you. So what have you got going on?
Ooh, well, we just launched our September-October workshops at Blackbird, which is super exciting. We already sold out of our natural dyeing workshop. Don't worry, though. We are going to do a ton more next summer when the weather gets nice again. So that's exciting. But there's some really great classes. Helen, you're teaching your very own Ashton Taub.
Yeah.
And we have some other new additions. We're doing a rope bowl class and an embroidery class with some local teachers, local artists. And we're also teaching the Wixton Howery, which is, you know, the most popular pattern in the sewing community, probably. Zadie Jumpsuit, which is a favorite in the office. And previous guest Emerald Aaron is actually coming out to Vancouver to teach a whole bunch of classes. She's doing an open sew night. She's doing a Jordy bralette evening class. And then she's doing a weekend bra making intensive with her new Black Beauty bra. It's an underwire bra. It's super cute. So I can't wait to have her out. And go check them out. There's some good ones. If you're local or if you're not local and you want to travel to Vancouver, it's a great opportunity to come visit, see the city and see our space.
Yeah, you get to meet us. And we always give people who come lots of tips about what to do and where to go. And Vancouver is such a fun city to visit.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Come visit us.
Yeah. That's so cool. I'm glad you're branching out into other fiber arts and stuff, because yeah, then I get to take those classes.
Yeah, we really want to also try to like bring more people into sewing, you know, because there's such a great sewing community here. So we want to try to find people that are interested in crafty things and like suck them in,
convert them to sewing world. Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah, we're hoping that'll work.
The class that I taught last week, one of the women in the class, it was a t-shirt class. We were making the plantain tee from Deer and Doe, a nice free t-shirt pattern if you're looking for one. And it was her first ever garment, oh, and she completed it, and it was amazing, and it was so much fun. So you really do not need to be an experienced sewist to take a sewing class. She totally rocked it.
Yeah, we have lots of help there too. Like, there's always not just the teacher. Natasha is always there coordinating and helping out, and you'll have lots of support in our classes.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, and other than that, it's just the huge weekly fabric releases and all that good stuff.
I posted a picture of my Cotswold swimsuit on Instagram.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is my most liked photo of all time.
No.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Oh my God.
Super happy about that. But everyone's like obsessed with that fabric and they want more. Are you going to restock
it? Oh my gosh. I wonder if I feel like we still have a little bit of in stock right now.
Really? Oh, there you go.
Go get it. Yeah. That's awesome. It's so pretty. I love your Cotswold.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun to sew. All right. The other thing I wanted to mention, we have a long episode, so I don't know why I'm so chatty today, but I wanted to mention the hashtag sewing in real life, started by Jenny from Workroom Social. And it's just a really great hashtag that I've seen a lot of people adopting. And it's all about sharing your sewing or your outfits and not worrying at all about how polished it is, the lighting, the situation. It can be blurry, it can be whatever, just sharing, because we all get caught up on that. Mm-hmm. All of us, I'm sure, have experienced that feeling of like, oh, I kind of want to share, but this photo's not really, you know?
Yeah.
But just do it anyway. Yeah. Just share anyway. And I've seen so many more posts popping up and it's just been really nice. So I've been trying to participate a little bit and share a bit more behind the scenes.
I've seen a lot of posts with that hashtag recently, kind of like started trending over the weekend.
Yeah.
And it's been really fun to just see a little bit more behind the scenes, less polished photos of people sewing.
Yeah, so exactly.
I gotta get on that train.
Take us on into the real life, folks.
Awesome. Well, should we get to the show? Because we have a lot to cover.
Oh, you of course want to talk about this.
It's our fabric Q&A. I've been so excited to do this episode because I love knowing what you want to know, I guess. I love reading all your questions. I love figuring out, you know, the common questions and figuring out what we can, all the advice that we can give you. So we got dozens of emails. I almost wrote hundreds, but it wasn't quite hundreds. We got dozens of emails and over 150 comments on Instagram, plus some voicemails and DMs. So we had a flood of questions about fabric. So thank you guys so much. We love doing these community episodes where you're all contributing to the content. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm. And it often guides our future episodes too. So we are going to do some follow-ups in the future as well.
Yeah. Some of those common questions that we maybe can't dive into super deep in this episode, we're going to get to them later on.
Eventually. We should do 5 episodes a week. Then we could cover everything.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That would be amazing. Just ditch everything else in our lives.
Yeah.
And do 5 episodes a week. But yeah, so like I said, we can't cover everything in this episode, but we have selected some of the most frequently asked questions, which we're going to cover today. And if you haven't already, please do listen to our previous episodes where we talk about fabric. A lot of your questions were answered in those episodes. So the first one would be, how big is your fabric stash? That's episode 3. It's a very early episode, so you might find it funny because we're very green. Very new at podcasting. And we chat a lot about fabric storage, fabric organization, how we handle our own fabric stash. Episode 23 is Fabrics 101. So that one, we go into all the baseline information about fabric. So we talk about fiber, weave, weight, how to shop for fabric, a lot of, you know, picking the right fabric for your project. We'll cover that a bit again today, but there's so much good information in episode 23. So definitely go back and check that out if you haven't already, or just go back and listen to it as a refresher, because there's lots of good info in there. And then episode 62 is all about sewing with knits. So we go really in depth on knit fabrics and working with knit fabrics. So that's a really good one. Even though it's called Sewing with Knits, it really does cover the fabric element as well. So go check those out.
Awesome.
Okay, let's dive in, because I mean, there's just so much.
Okay, so what was the most frequently asked question?
Okay, so definitely our most asked question was on identifying fabrics. So I'm going to read this one from Amelia. I buy a lot of fabric secondhand from op shops, thrift shops, and I'm always a little in the dark about what I'm picking up. Do you have some pointers on how to identify fabric? I can generally tell if it's natural or synthetic material going by feel, but I don't know how to label them after that. We also had a lot of questions about people who knew how to tell the difference between knits and wovens, but nothing beyond that. So it seems like people sort of have a baseline knowledge of figuring out what a fabric is, but then beyond that, it can be really difficult when it's not labeled. And I completely understand that. Unfortunately, there isn't really like a miracle solution to this. I think that a lot of this comes with time and experience with sewing. I know you guys aren't going to like that answer, but it really does. The more you handle fabric, the more that you shop for fabric and pay attention to those labels when they are there, the more that you're going to learn what different fibers feel like, what different weaves look like, and you'll have an easier time identifying fabrics when they are not labeled. So my biggest recommendation is when you go to fabric stores with labels, the ones that label their fabrics well, touch and feel everything that you can and try to get to know those fibers and those weaves. And then the same thing goes for shopping online. When you are shopping online and those fabrics are well labeled, you know, keep those listings. You can have an Evernote or a Trello board or a notebook where you're keeping that information down, maybe with a little swatch of the fabric, so that you're starting your own kind of reference book for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to be able to just look at a fabric and identify it, is just with time.
Totally.
Do you have any tips to add?
Well, there are some fabric swatch reference books already created out there that you can get. So maybe we'll link those in the show notes, because I know we've talked about them before. But I agree, it really comes with time. And it took me a while to figure out what works for what project, and also how to identify things when I'm at the store and I'm feeling them. And I mean, polyester always feels kind of plasticky. Yeah. That's really the only tip I have. When you rub it together, it makes a swishing noise. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Other than that, if it's not polyester, it can be really hard to tell. So
yeah, generally, synthetic fibers tend to have a cooler hand. So when you touch them, they feel kind of cold and a little bit plasticky. And then the natural fibers are going to have a warmer hand feel. So when you touch them, they're just like warmer against the skin. But again, it's hard to kind of understand what that means until you really touch and feel a lot of different fabrics, and then you'll kind of understand what I mean by cool and warm hand feel.
Exactly.
That's kind of a weird way of referring to fabric, but it really does come through when you touch a lot of fabrics. Mm-hmm.
What about burn tests? Because I've always heard that recommended as something you can do to identify a mystery fabric, is cut off a little piece and just burn it.
You can totally do a burn test, and I do think that there's a time and a place for burn tests. I don't think it's something that you want to go and like bring your lighter around and start burning fabric in the thrift store. You know, that's a little bit more tricky because you just can't really do that. You can't really cut a swatch and then go burn it unless maybe your thrift store lets you do that. But let's say you go to an estate sale and you pick up a box of fabric, and then you're going through it and you want to actually figure out what everything is. You can do a burn test. So there is a lot of information on each fiber and what it's going to look like and smell like when you do a burn test. So we're going to definitely link a really great chart from Threads magazine. It's a PDF that you can download and it has all of the information in there. So we're not going to go through every single one today because there's quite a bit, but essentially what you need for a burn test is some kind of source of flame. So a candle or a lighter. You don't want to use a match because matches have a smell that can kind of affect the smell of the fabric. And part of identifying the fabric is smelling the flames and what it smells like after you've burnt it. So a match can kind of mess with that smell. So you want to use either a candle or a lighter. You're going to need tweezers because you don't want to hold the fabric when you burn it, obviously, because you can burn your fingers. And then some kind of vessel to hold the fabric in as you're burning it. So either a bowl or a pie plate and a aluminum foil, something, you know, whatever you're comfortable getting a little bit of ash on, you can use that. And then what you're doing is you're cutting a small swatch of fabric, you're burning it, and then you have to notice what happens. So there's going to be smell, there's going to be ash texture. So with polyester, for example, the fabric kind of beads up and it becomes plasticky. So it's pretty easy to identify when there is polyester in a fabric because it has a very distinctive look. But when you're going in between different natural fibers, it's a little bit more difficult to figure it out. So then you're going to be looking at smell. You're going to be looking at the texture of the ash. Sometimes the flame will change colors and the particular color of the flame is going to help you identify what natural fiber that is. So there are a lot of different factors. I don't think it's particularly practical to do burn tests often, but I think it's a really great way to identify a fabric when you're like, really like, I want to try to figure out what this is. Mm-hmm. And it's a mystery and I don't know how to care for it or whatever.
Yeah, I think most of the time people are at the store and they see a cool fabric and they're holding it in their hands and they're like, is this a quality fabric or is this just like a weird polyester sheet or something?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's a total mystery. And sometimes you just have to go with your gut instinct. If you really like the print and you want to make something out of it, then go ahead and buy it.
Yeah.
If it's the right weight, then you can use it for the project that it's got a good weight for. And you don't necessarily need to know what that fabric is.
That's kind of the last thing I wanted to say, is just not to get too hung up on stressing out about identifying exactly what your fabric is. Because at the end of the day, if you like the fabric and you want to wear it, if you've draped it over your body and you know you like the drape, you like the hand feel, it doesn't really matter what the makeup of the fabric is. And if you're worried about caring for the fabric, like how are you going to care for it, then I think the biggest thing that you can do, or the best thing that you can do, is cut a small piece of the fabric and just do some tests on it. Test sewing it, test ironing it, test washing it, see how it reacts, and then figure out a game plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I think we're going to talk about fabric care next.
Yes, we are. So we have a really great voicemail from April that we're going to play.
Hi, Helen. Hi, Caroline. This is April from Southern California. My fabric question is about pre-washing. With sustainability in mind, a lot of us are washing our clothes in cold water and hang drying. What does that mean for pre-washing? Do we still need to be concerned with shrinkage? Or are there other reasons to pre-wash? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
That is an amazing question, April. I think probably a lot of people are wondering that too. Why do I have to throw my fabric in the washer and dryer if I'm just going to be hand washing or cool washing and hanging it to dry? The short answer really is that it's up to you. If you don't want to pre-wash it, if you just want to cool wash and hang to dry your fabric, then that's totally fine. I think that's great. The longer answer for me is that I would still pre-wash it in the washing machine and put it through the dryer. And my reason for that is that I like to put my fabric through the wringer before I sew it up into a garment, just in case. Let's say one day your partner or your roommate or your mom is over and they decide to do a load of laundry for you and they wash your garment that you did not intend to put in the washer and dryer, you're kind of avoiding those disasters if you put your fabric in the washer and dryer right from the get-go, you're getting all of that shrink out of it right away. The other reason is that fabrics often have finishings or some kind of like starch or chemical that they will put on the fabric after it's woven. So that first wash just gets all of that out of the fabric. So those are the reasons why I would always just wash my fabric, washer, dryer. I mean, unless you can't put the fabric in the dryer for whatever reason, like if it's a wool or something, you want to treat it differently. But if it's a fabric that is washable, then I would wash it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Sometimes I throw my rayons through the dryer twice because they tend to shrink a little bit more even after that first shrinking. So shrink them up real good and then you're good to go.
Yes. I hope that answers your question, April.
All right. Our next voicemail is from T.
Hi, this is T. I'm calling from Fort Worth, Texas, and just wanted to know if you guys experience fading when you pre-wash your fabrics. I've tried a couple of different techniques, but I just notice if I buy a black or a navy, something dark, when I wash it and I pull it out of the dryer, it's already faded, and I don't really like that. Any tips for me? Thanks. Love the podcast. Bye.
Yeah, so to a certain extent, most natural fibers will fade with washing, especially when you're looking at things like linen and cotton. One of the things that we say at Blackbird is that fibers are going to fade and wear with use. And we really like that kind of beautiful worn-in look of the fabric once you kind of get those fade lines around the bias, around the neckline or the hem. Like, I really like that look. But if you prefer to keep your colors more vibrant, then we sort of say handle your fabric with extra care. So hand wash in cold water, don't put it in the dryer, you know, don't dry clean it, because dry cleaning really has like a lot of, it sort of wears the fabric. So those would be my tips if you want to avoid fading. But the short answer really is that yes, it is fairly normal for natural fibers to fade.
All right. Our next question is from GenCon 16. How do I wash fabric when I don't know what it is? I'm worried about shrinking it. Well, shrinking is okay. Shrinking is going to happen when you wash your fabric, and you actually want to shrink your fabric before you sew it, because you don't want to make up the garment and then wash it and have your garment shrink. So that's why we pre-wash. And if you're not sure what's going to happen in the washer and dryer, the best thing you can do is to cut maybe a 10 inch by 10 inch swatch, something fairly sizable. Make sure you measure it and then throw it in the wash and see what happens. See how much it shrinks in each direction. You can even, you know, sew a basting line of stitching along the grain line so you know which way is the crosswise and which is the lengthwise. And you can serge the edges if you want. You can do certain things to take care of that while it's in the dryer or the washer. And then, yeah, see if it shrinks, and then you'll know what to expect with your final piece.
Yeah. And don't panic when your fabric changes after washing, because almost all fabrics are going to change a little bit in terms of hand feel, quality after you wash them. And this is totally normal. Like I said, there are finishes added to the fabrics in production, so those are going to wash out with your first wash. So it's totally normal for a shiny fabric to lose some of its sheen, for a natural fiber to fade a little bit. Like, the, all of those things are very normal. You really kind of get to know your fabric the most after the first wash.
Yeah, I often find the change is positive. When I pull my fabrics out of the dryer, they're no longer stiff. They're so soft and they're more drapey and they have that lovely soft hand feel. And it's just an exciting moment when you open the dryer door.
Yes, it really is. Fabric is so exciting. All right. Our next question is from Spitz Becker on Instagram. When can you hand wash versus machine wash delicately versus dry clean only silk? I have some Dupioni that I'm planning to hand wash prior to sewing, but I know it might be risky. So again, my answer to this is test, test, test. Cut a piece of your fabric and test wash it and just see what happens. This is the best and, in my opinion, only way to know for sure if you are kind of veering from the care instructions, whether or not that's going to work. All fabrics are different, especially silks. I know that raw silk noils can wash really well. I know that we have a new silk linen blend in the shop that our supplier suggested dry clean only, but we took it home, test washed it. It washed up amazingly. So we added those recommendations to our product listing. But, you know, for you at home, just do a test wash and see what happens.
That's my new favorite fabric, by the way.
Oh, it's nice, right?
It's so nice. Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. All right. The next one is from at Call Me Al. How do you deal with fabrics that get shiny when they're pressed? I have a really hard time with sateen, which needs to be pressed to look good, but gets those ugly, shiny marks. Oh, I feel you.
Oh, yeah. I do, too, because that happens all the time. It's very, very common with synthetic fibers and even cellulose-based fibers like Tencel and rayon, bamboo. Sometimes if it's a woven, especially, will get a little bit shiny. So again, testing is the best way to go. So cut a piece of your fabric and just see how high you can go with the heat on your iron before you get those shiny marks. But if you need that higher heat to kind of press the fabric, but you're seeing that it's getting shiny, you can use a press cloth. So the press cloth is acting as a protective layer between your fabric and the heat of the iron. So it's still going to get that heat, but it's not going to, you know, flatten out the fibers and kind of burn them a little bit, which is what creates that shininess. Another tip that I had is that if you are noticing the grates of your irons, you know how the ironing board has like kind of a
metal grate
and then a layer of batting. If you're noticing that coming through, I find that happens often with IKEA ironing boards.
Yeah.
Because the batting or the padding layer is quite lightweight.
That's a nice way of putting it.
It's cheap as... you can actually add a layer of quilt batting or two layers of quilt batting to your ironing board, and that will solve that problem beautifully.
Yes, highly recommend adding another layer to your ironing board. Yeah. Everybody go do that. Yeah.
But essentially, you know, it's all about the heat. That's what creates those shiny marks. So either lower your heat, use a press cloth.
What's a press cloth?
Ooh, so a press cloth is a piece of fabric that can take really high heat that you're using as a protective layer. So you don't have to buy one in the store. They do sell them, and you can buy them at fabric stores or craft stores, but you can just use a scrap piece of cotton muslin, of cotton shirting. Silk organza is the best, in my opinion, because you can see through the silk organza. You can see what you're doing, but it's really, really strong. It can handle really high heat, so it's not going to burn. But yeah, you can just cut a piece, like even 20 by 20, like the bigger piece, the better. Because if you're fusing large pieces of fabric, then I always use a press cloth in between so that I don't get that sticky gumminess on my iron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. Our next group of questions from you all is about grain lines. We mentioned this in the intro. In a Haystack wants to know, what's the best way to make sure the fabric is on grain before you cut it out? Well, for plain weave fabrics, you can pull out a single thread along the cross grain, and that way you'll know where the grain line and the cross grain are, because the grain line is going to be perpendicular. This is an involved process.
It takes forever.
It takes forever. It's not very much fun. Frankly, it's really annoying. So that is one thing you can do. Caroline, what do you do?
I just do it visually. So I lay the fabric out, and most often I'm folding it in half. So I'm folding the selvage to the other selvage, and then the fold line is along the grain line. And you just want to pay attention to that fold line. That's the most important part. So you want to make sure that it's flat, that it lays smooth, that there's no kind of wrinkles, especially with knits. So you can move your selvage edge sort of back and forth until you get a really nice smooth line along the fold line.
Yeah.
No wrinkles, no bumps. That for me is the best way. But yeah, I mean, pulling out the single thread, you can't do it too close to the cut line, or where a lot of the time fabric stores will rip the fabric along that line, and that can distort that edge of the fabric. So you can't like pull that thread too close to the edge. So you're kind of wasting fabric because you have to do it a little bit further in. Mm-hmm. And then you end up with a thread missing all along that line, and you can't really use that to cut out your project. I used to do the pulling out a single thread in school because it was really helpful with draping, so that you can visualize the cross grain and the grain line. So you'd pull out a thread along the cross grain, and then you'd sort of perpendicular to that mark the grain line. You can straighten out the grain line that way. So we would have to like actually go to the iron and use pins to make a perfect right angle, and then like press and steam the fabric so that it like you're like truing the grain, basically.
Wow.
It was so involved, though. Like for me, that wasn't worth the extra effort into it. Maybe if you're, you know, working on like a couture project or something that's like really, you know, you're using a really expensive fabric or something that's really special to you that you want it to come out perfect, sure, mm-hmm. you can do that. But for me, I do it visually.
Yeah. Yeah, I do it visually too. And I use the folding in half and checking that fold line trick you mentioned. I've also found that with leftover scraps, when I keep my scraps from previous projects, then you have those pieces where there's no salvage left and you don't know what's up and down left and right, and it's a little bit hard to figure out how to use that piece of fabric. Sometimes with the lighter weight ones, if you hold them up to the light, you can see really clearly cross grains and grains. At least you can get a sense for one or the other, and then you're kind of on the grain line, maybe you're on the cross grain, but either way, it's probably going to be fine.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. All right. Our next question about grain lines is from Jen Seville. Do I always have to go with the grain line? I saw some fabric with horizontal stripes. I'd rather it be vertical stripes. Can I just go perpendicular to the selvage?
I love this question because we see a lot of people playing with stripes out there, even bias cut things for patterns that do not have bias cut bodices. And the answer is yes, you can go against the grain and go cross grain if you're using a plain weave fabric, a fabric that doesn't have stretch lengthwise or widthwise, that is in fact woven and not a knit, then you can go ahead and play around with those stripes and you can cut your whole project on the cross grain, or you can cut parts of it on the cross grain. You can even cut parts of it on the bias. Just be aware that when you're working with fabric on the bias, it behaves quite differently than fabric cut on grain or cross grain because it does have a lot more stretch to it. So always make sure that you're stay stitching. Maybe you even want to fully interface that piece so that it doesn't get warped out of position, and just be mindful of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really try not to handle the fabric too much when you're working with something that's on the bias, because the more you handle it, the more it kind of warps and stretches out.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. One other thought that I have about this is that for knit fabric, you can work on the cross grain, especially with stripes. I know sometimes like a stripe will be running horizontally. You want it to be vertical in a swimsuit or something. You can do that as long as you have the right stretch percentage going in that direction. So if you need to have, let's say, 75% four-way stretch, so stretching along the grain line and across the grain line, then you can still do that as long as you have enough stretch.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I've definitely cut out underwear out of my leftovers from a t-shirt on the cross grain using bamboo jersey, and it's fine.
Yeah.
It's underwear.
If it stretches enough, it's fine.
Yeah.
All right. So our next little section is all about fabric terminology. Let's demystify some things, Helen.
Okay. Our first question is from Gaylory. I've only been sewing seriously for about a year now, and I always am confused when I go to the fabric store and the pattern says lightweight, midweight, or heavyweight linen, or any other kind of fabric. I know I could just ask the associates to tell me, but I always get nervous and I never ask them. I would like to try to figure it out myself, but I have no idea how to tell the difference. And another thing, I always see on Blackbird that there's all these fabrics like linen slub or cotton lawn, and I'm always so confused what that is. I mean, great questions, and I totally relate to your feelings of nervousness around sales associates in fabric stores. I also have that. Even now I have that. It's kind of one of those funny things where you never really want to ask. You're not sure if your question is the right question, and then sometimes if it's really busy, they can be kind of short with you and not really help you that well. And it depends on the store, of course, but yeah, I totally feel you.
Yeah, I know. But that's how you learn. Yeah. I think, you know, if you ask sales associates for help, sure, sometimes you might get a short answer, but then you might get somebody who really wants to teach you things, and you might, you know, learn so much in that moment. So I do think that with time, if you can try to ask questions when you're in a fabric store, that really is how you're going to learn the most. If you're wondering about weights of fabrics, then, you know, lightweight, midweight, heavyweight, just that part of the question, listen to our Fabrics 101 episode, because we go deep into that. And we also link to a great article on IndieSew where she talks about fabric weights. But to speak to the part of the question where you're asking about linen slub or cotton lawn. So slub is a fabric where the yarn has an irregular shape. So it might be thin in some parts and thicker in other parts. And that shape, that irregular shape of the yarn, shows up as texture in the fabric. So that's how you end up with parts of the fabric that have these little slubs, which are basically raised little lines in the fabric. That's really just from the texture of the yarn. And then lawn is super soft and crisp. So it's a higher quality, generally cotton fabric, and it's really best for garment sewing. So it's really soft. It's super, you know, crisp, and it still has a really nice drape, even though it has like a crispy hand. It's really fun to work with. It's just a really nice high quality cotton fabric.
Yeah, cotton lawn is dreamy. Mm-hmm. An excellent choice for any beginners out there who are getting started with sewing, because it presses well. It's a joy to work with, and you'll end up with a garment that's more wearable than if you were using a quilting cotton. And cotton lawn also comes in lots of fun prints and colors, so you have that selection as well.
Yes, definitely. Our next question is from two ladies on Instagram, M and Emma and Rosie Rue. What is charmeuse?
Spelt with eight O's. Charmeuse.
I get the feeling this is an inside joke.
Do you actually want to know what charmeuse is?
So charmeuse is a satin woven fabric, and it's usually made from silk. It's super light and floaty. It's really soft. It's extra luxurious. It has a really beautiful sheen to it. So it's kind of like a silk satin.
I don't think I've ever made anything from charmeuse.
Have you ever made anything from satin?
Yes, I have, but not charmeuse.
So you've experienced something similar.
I don't work with silk that much. If I do, I go for like the wash silk.
Yeah.
The easy silk.
Yeah. Charmeuse definitely does have that distinctive kind of satiny shine to it. Mm-hmm. So I think it works really well for certain kinds of garments, but for everyday wear, not necessarily, unless you're a very fancy person.
Very fancy lady.
Who wears silk blouses to work or something. If you are, good for you. That sounds
lots
awesome.
Of people wear silk blouses to work, Caroline.
Only fancy people.
Only fancy people. All right. Our next question is from Max and Wolf. Ooh, I love him.
Hi, Adam.
All right. French terry. It seems to be inconsistent from one manufacturer to the next. Is it not just one type of fabric, or are some stores just mislabeling it?
What do you think, Helen?
Well, I can relate to the question, because when I encounter French terry in the fabric stores, it's often different. It's always different everywhere I go. It's either, you know, really soft and drapey. If you're working with like a bamboo French terry, the one that you guys usually carry is gorgeously soft. And then sometimes with cotton French terries, they're more stiffer and they remind me more of something you would make a pair of sweatpants out of, or mm-hmm. a sweatshirt, right? So there is quite a range in how they can appear, but they always have that flat front looped back, which is distinctive to the French. That's what a French terry is. So if it doesn't have the flat front and the looped back, then it probably is mislabeled.
Yep.
But if it has that and it just feels different to you, it might just be the fibers that are making up that blend.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like anything, the fiber is going to affect the drape and the hand feel and the weight of the fabric. So if you're looking at a twill, a silk twill is going to be very different from a cotton twill, the same way that a bamboo terry is going to be very different from a cotton terry.
Yeah, exactly. We talk all about the fiber versus the weave or the structure of fabric in our Fabrics 101. And one is the ingredients and one is the recipe. So it can produce really different results.
Yeah, exactly. But I do love French terry.
Me too. I'm excited for fall, because then I could make things out of French terry again.
It's also referred to in the industry as French fleece, which is extra confusing, because when you think of fleece, you think that sort of fuzzy back, right?
Yeah.
But French fleece is like French terry. It has that loop back. So those terry loops are not cut or brushed.
On the They're one side, looped. Yeah. Whereas full-on terry has it, it's all loops everywhere.
Exactly.
All loopy.
All loopy.
All right. What about fabric quality? Min wants to know, is there a good way to tell the quality of fabrics? Even in person, sometimes it's hard to tell with certain substrates I'm not used to. I would appreciate if you can touch on how to judge quality of fabric.
This is a really great question.
I mean, you guys must do this a lot, because I know you get samples from suppliers all the time and you have to judge the quality.
Yeah. And it can be difficult, but as a general rule, if the price seems too good to be true, it probably is. So if somebody is sending me a sample with like really, really low priced fabrics, unless it's dead stock or it's something that, you know, I really know the manufacturer and I know that it's good quality, then I'll usually be like, it's probably they're cutting corners somewhere, be it with the staple length of the fiber or the manufacturing process or the labor. You know, you want to make sure that you're considering all of that.
Question. What's a staple length?
So the staple length is when you're making the yarn that you're using to weave the fabric, it's all made up of staple pieces of fiber, basically. So staple length, a longer staple length is going to create a smoother, higher quality yarn, whereas a shorter staple length means like if you're pulling on that piece of yarn, it's going to break apart easier. That makes sense.
Oh, so there are no like staples involved.
No staples involved. Okay. No
staples were harmed.
I was gonna say no office supplies were harmed, but yes. But yeah, like I said, this can be hard. And again, it's one of those things that comes with time. As you touch and feel more fabrics, you're going to understand the hand feel of a lower quality fabric. One of my biggest tips would be to look at the tightness of the weave. So if you're looking at a fabric and you can really see that weave, especially when you're looking at like a cotton or linen, that is going to indicate quality a lot of the time. And also just like how easy it's going to be to work with and how durable it's going to be to wash and wear. When you have a looser weave fabric, it's going to snag more easily. It's going to unravel quicker. It's not going to wash as nicely. So tight weave is a really good thing to look at. We did get a ton of questions about pilling, and we're going to touch on that a little bit again later, but rubbing a small corner of the fabric together really vigorously. I do this a lot on fabric samples from suppliers and they hate it, but I do it anyways, because that is a really great test for pilling, because pilling really is just rubbing when the fabric rubs against itself or rubs against something else. And those fibers kind of loosen up and create these little balls of fiber on the surface of the fabric. And that's what creates pills. So if you're rubbing that fabric together really, really hard, you're kind of testing out how much it's going to pill, because that's that motion that's going to create pilling. So I like to do that in the fabric store, a little corner, or mm-hmm. when I get a sample, and see how it reacts.
Yeah. And with knit fabrics too, you can stretch them out and see what the recovery is. That's the amount that it bounces back after you stretch it. If you notice that it's still kind of bagging out after you've stretched it out, then that is a sign of a lower quality knit, or at least a knit with a lot less spandex in it. So depending on what you're trying to make, something to consider as well.
Definitely.
Our next question is from Lisa. I love Ponte and have made two tops with it. The issue I have is that the fabric pills like crazy. I don't know if it's the manufacturer or if it's just the nature of the fabric. Or does it have more to do with the fibers it's woven with? Is there a better quality Ponte I could buy?
Great question, because Ponte does tend to pill. It's one of those fabrics that just, it pills. Don't ask me why. I don't know the answer to that question.
It is interesting because it's so smooth on the surface. Mm-hmm. And I found like sweater knits tend to pill quite a bit, but there's a lot of fibers there to catch on each other under the arms or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Ponte, you would think, because it's so smooth, that it wouldn't pill.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mystery.
I do think that part of it is that a lot of those Pontes that are really desirable, that have a really beautiful soft hand feel, have a really high rayon content, and rayon is prone to pilling. Mm. So I think that's a factor. Personally, my favorite blend for Ponte is a rayon nylon spandex blend. So that nylon, for some reason, really helps with the pilling factor. And with Ponte, it's one of those things. Higher price equals higher quality in the case of Ponte, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you guys usually carry Ponte in the fall, winter.
We
do. You have one you like.
And we have that one blend that we really, really like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, look out for that one, Lisa.
All right. And then the next question is from Gabe and Zach. Is there a way to prevent or minimize pilling on fabrics? Are certain ones more prone to pill? So preventing and minimizing pilling, definitely hand washing, hanging or laying your garment flat to dry, depending on what it is. If it's a heavy garment, I wouldn't hang it. I would lay it flat if you can, if you have the space, because hanging is just going to stretch out that garment, especially with like bamboo jerseys or, you know, anything that's like a maxi dress. I probably wouldn't hang it if it's in a knit. And then, as I mentioned earlier, rayon or cellulose fibers, so that includes bamboo, tencel, modal, viscose also is just another word for rayon, they are more prone to pilling, especially in knits. So that is why they're so soft, right? When you have a really soft hand feel, it's because you have that shorter staple length in the fiber. It's because it's been brushed maybe, or it's just like a softer fiber. So it's going to kind of loosen up more easily and create those pills. So that's why it's really hard sometimes when we're sourcing fabrics for the shop, because we get these knits that are so soft, but then they pill and it's a bummer. And it's kind of one of those things where if you want to wear those really soft knits, you sort of just have to get one of those like pill shavy things and just sort of deal with it.
Keep handling it.
That is really why they're so soft. So
And with minimizing pilling, you can also think about the type of fabric that you have, if you want to use a beautiful rayon for a project, and the pattern that you're going to pair it with, and whether or not you're going to end up with areas where there's high pilling opportunities, like jumpsuits or longer sleeved items where, you know, the fabric can rub together under the arms or between your legs. And maybe you consider something sleeveless and more of a dress or a skirt or something, so that there's less opportunities for pilling. I mean, that's kind of a silly tip, but
no, but it's true. Like, I wouldn't make a pair of leggings out of, you know, a fabric that is prone to pilling.
Yeah, because I did that once and it just wore out completely.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all the fibers were gone and all that was left with the spandex threads.
Yeah.
Brother Aiden, the knitting monk, is hosting the Making Community Fiber Arts Retreat at Holy Cross Monastery from May 26th to 31st, 2020.
During this week-long event, you will learn natural dyeing, piecing and embellishment, and mending from three amazing artists, Christy Johnson, Kenya Miles, and Katrina Rodebach.
In addition to the workshops, you'll dive into conversations on history, embodiment, sustainability, ecology, and the deeper meanings of our fiber arts practices. Of course, there will be lots of time to build diverse and integrated community with each other and the teachers.
We know from personal experience just how amazing attending a making retreat can be for building friendships and getting inspired to create more in your making practice. And everyone is welcome from any faith background or none at all.
Reserve your place before November 1st and mention Love to Sew and you'll get $50 off their suggested donation. Reserve with a friend before November 1st and mention Love to Sew and you'll each get $100 off. Visit holycrossmonastery.com/events/fiber for more information about this amazing event. That's holycrossmonastery.com/events/fiber.
So we also got a lot of questions about choosing the right fabric for your project. So we thought we'd throw in some extra tips in here, but also listen to our Fabrics 101 episode because we do get into that there. This question is from Francis. One of my major problems is picking out fabric. Unless it's really thick or thin, I have trouble knowing what will work for a pattern. Some of my fails have been because I choose the wrong fabric. So the biggest thing with this is that when you're in the fabric store and you're picking out a fabric, you want to assess the weight, the drape, and the hand feel of the fabric. Those are like the three major things that I always look at. So you want to hold the fabric. Is it heavy? Is it going to work for the project that you're making? Try to drape it over your body. See how it hangs and falls. Is that going to work for the pattern that you're thinking of making? And then the hand feel. So is it something that you're going to want to have against your skin, that you're going to want to wear on a day-to-day basis? I also want to put a little plug for my Skillshare class. I'm going to put a link in the show notes for you to get a free trial at Skillshare. If you want to just watch the class, you can totally do that. But I cover, that's exactly what my class is about choosing the right fabric for your project. So I cover all of that and there's video. So it's a lot more visual. And I think that might help you out as well.
Oh, definitely.
Do you have any other tips for picking the right fabric? Like, what's your go-to? How do you know?
I always like to copy the designer. And you really can't go wrong with this, right? Like, most designers, not only will they give you a fabric recommendations list, which I know can be confusing when you're just getting started sewing, but it will get easier to tell, you know, what's a lightweight, midweight, heavyweight. We were talking about that earlier. But if they say rayon challis, great, tencel twill, awesome, then you just pick one of those two. Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong, right? And you can look at their samples too. Often in, you know, the marketing material along with the pattern. They might talk about what the models are wearing, exactly what fabric they use, where they got it from. You can just go buy that. Mm-hmm. I've done that, you know, mm-hmm. like that is going to guarantee that you have the same result that they did. And then after that is when you can veer a little bit more from their recommendations. But I do get questions sometimes, people wanting to make, you know, Winslow's and knit fabric, or maybe they want to make Avery and denim, and like cool ideas. I, you know, go for that if you want to experiment, but know that you're not going to get the same result that we did when we made the samples.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
you're off script.
Also, with Instagram, it's so easy to just go and look at a hashtag. You don't even have to have an Instagram account. You can go and look at that online and look at the hashtag for the pattern and see what other people are using. And a lot of the time on Instagram, people are actually citing sources for the fabrics and giving specific names for the fabric. So that's also a really great starting point, especially if you're looking for kind of a specific look that you're not seeing in the product photos. Check out the hashtag and maybe you'll find something.
Yeah, great tip.
So what about working with trickier fabrics?
Ooh. Melanie says, I was hoping you had some tips for sewing with chiffon or other sheer fabrics. I have a couple of meters lying around and I finally want to get rid of them by transforming them into something wearable that I'll adore. They're pretty see-through, so I probably need to line them in some way, and was wondering how best to do that without losing the characteristic flow of the fabric. For skirts, I guess I could just layer the fabric over itself, but what about tops? Two layers of the fabric, sadly, are not enough to cover me modestly. And I was thinking of making something lofty, wide, maybe oversized or wrapped to get me through the hot summer days. All right.
Ooh.
I mean, I also have some sheer fabrics in my stash and they do tend to sit there for a while because it can be a little daunting.
Well, I did want to mention a new pattern that came out recently from Friday Pattern Company, the Wilder Gown.
Ooh, yes.
Because I think it's one of those ones that's perfect for sheer fabrics because you can layer it over top of like a slip or even just like a tank dress, something really simple. Even wearing it over like a pair of jeans looks super cool. It's like a really oversized sort of bohemian style dress that I think is perfect for that type of fabric.
It's very cool. It's got like ghostly nightgown vibes, but in the best possible way.
Yeah, I'm totally gonna make one.
Oh, you are? Yeah. Oh my gosh, I can't wait.
Yeah, I already got the pattern printed.
Wow.
But in terms of lining fabrics that are a little bit see-through, you can line them and make the lining a little bit shorter than the outer layer to kind of accentuate the sheerness and do it justice. So if you're doing a skirt, you can line it and just make that lining knee length, and maybe the skirt's midi length so you can get that sheerness around your legs. I think that's a really nice look. Also, just lining with like fabric. So you want to, like if you're working with a silk chiffon, you might want to line it with like a silk satin or a silk habitat, something that's still lightweight, that's not going to affect the drape too much. And that when you wash it and care for it, you're not worried about, you know, different fibers reacting differently.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of working with sheer fabrics, I mean, there isn't really a miracle solution here. You have to be patient. Spray starch works really well. So if you test out some spray starch on your fabric and it works, then that's a great way to give some stability to the fabric. So spraying that on and ironing it, it's just going to give it some stiffness. And then make sure that you are stay stitching all of your openings and curves so that it's not stretching out, because those lightweight sheer fabrics are super delicate and they are going to warp and stretch out as you work with them.
Yes. And I would also recommend, if you're able to, use a straight stitch needle plate on your machine so that you don't have that larger hole in your machine that's usually there, so that you can switch between zigzag and straight stitch. Some throat plates can turn around and they have a straight stitch on the other side, which is just a small hole for the needle to go into. And this can actually make a huge difference with those lighter weight, more delicate fabrics.
Yeah.
And microtex needles.
Yes, it's true. And that way with the straight stitch needle plate, it's so that the machine doesn't eat your fabric, right?
Exactly.
That fabric doesn't like kind of dive into.
It helps to feed it through better as well.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also that tissue paper trick. So that can work for cutting out fabric. So if you have a layer of tissue paper on top of your fabric and below your fabric, you're kind of sandwiching it and then cutting out, it just helps to keep it all in place. And you can also use that with, as you're sewing your fabric, you just use that layer of tissue paper as you sew. It helps to keep it stable. And then you can just rip it right off.
Yeah. Good luck. All right. Handmade Shelby wants to know, do we have any tips for cutting rayon challis? I've worked with it on my last couple projects and I love it, but it was a grower. I used scissors and I think rotary cutter would have been better, but how do I do that with such big pattern pieces? Oh, yes. Especially if you're cutting on a small table or if you're cutting out on the floor and it's just like overwhelming when you have all these shifty pieces. And yeah, I feel you.
You know I love my rotary cutter, right?
Yes.
I love cutting with a rotary cutter. But at home at my apartment, my cutting mat is not very big. So when I'm cutting out big pieces, it doesn't really work. And also, sometimes my rotary cutter blade goes dull and I have to just use scissors. So here's what I do, and I think it works really, really well. I lay out my pattern pieces and weigh them down with pattern weight. So I'm not using any pins there. And then I trace around those pattern pieces with a chalk pen. So I'm marking everything with a chalk pen, mark your dart or mark your notches, mark the edges of your pattern piece. And then you remove your pattern pieces and pin those layers of fabric together along the chalk lines. So this is ensuring that when you're cutting out your fabric, the fabric isn't kind of moving. As you know, sometimes like the top layer will move a little bit more than the bottom layer, and then your pieces end up being a slightly different size. Sometimes they can even, the cut lines can even be wonky for that reason. So adding pins along all of that chalk line is really going to help to keep things nice and stable. And then cut patiently with some good sharp shears.
I like this.
And I really like this method too, especially when you're working with like a rayon or something that's like crepey and lightweight and a little bit shifty, because pinning along those lines not only helps with cutting, but it also helps just working with the fabrics, doing your notches later on, doing your, you know, all of the different markings that you might want to do within the fabric. It just kind of helps to keep your pieces organized until you need to use them. So I really like this method. It takes longer, but I think it's works the best for me when I'm working with those shifty fabrics.
That does sound like a good method. And you can also try spray starch. It's not something that I use super often, but I have heard that it can be a game changer. So you might as well give it a try and see if it works for you.
Good tip.
All right. Melinda wants to know how best to work with crinkly fabric. For example, I want to wear the finished garment in its crinkled state. I guess I could cut it out while it's crinkled, but then how do I go about pressing the seams? Will it distort the shape? Does that even matter? This is a good question. We were talking about throwing fabric in the washer and dryer, and sometimes with those crinkly fabrics, they crinkle up so much in the dryer. It's like you pull them out and they're just like,
yeah.
And you're like, oh no, yeah. What am I going to do with those?
Yeah, definitely. I think the first thing you have to do when you're working with this type of fabric that shrinks up in the wash is decide how you want your final garment to look. So do you want it to be in its crinkly state when you're wearing it, or do you want it to be the ironed version of that fabric? And that's kind of how you have to work with it when you're cutting out your pattern and when you're sewing it up. So let's say you have a crinkly linen or linen gauze that shrinks up a lot. If you want it to be crinkly in the end, then I would cut out your pattern pieces crinkly. And then as you're working with it, if you're pressing it and it's kind of like flattening out a little bit and growing, then don't worry too much about that, because once you wash it, it's going to crinkle back up again. And then moving forward, if you're not ironing it, if you're just working with it and wearing it crinkly, then it's going to just keep, you know, that crinkly state and you don't have to worry about it. And if you want it to be kind of smoother and more ironed out, just keep in mind that, you know, you want to do that before you cut out your pieces. Then obviously you don't have to worry about it when you're sewing it up. It's not going to grow as much, but then every time you wash it, you're going to have to iron your garment, and that's kind of a pain. So it's really up to you.
Yes, it's up to you, but there's a clear right answer. No, I'm kidding. But there also is, like, you have to consider what garments will work for a crinkled fabric. It's not going to work for something super fitted. You definitely want to go with something boxier, more flowy, a Donovan skirt, a Wixton shift, a box top.
Minimal, you know. Darts.
Yeah.
Or actually, don't do darts. Like, it won't work. Unless you want it to be something that you're always going to iron, you know? And then also just keep in mind, if you are going to be working with this fabric and wearing it in its crinkled form, then it will affect the width of the fabric. So you want to order extra fabric, because that can really affect, you know, how much fabric you have.
Yes, definitely. All right. The next fabric we're going to talk about is the double gauze. The color Forest says, I love the Sweet Pea Gauze from Spoonflower. I serge the edges before I wash it like they recommended on their website, but it's hard to cut thin bias strips out of it. Do you have any tips for working with double gauze?
Yes. So I have to say, we also had like a zillion questions about double gauze.
Really?
Everybody wants to know how to work
with double gauze. It's so popular right now. I see it in so many high quality garment shops around Vancouver. Double gauze is everywhere.
Yeah. And it is a really similar thing to what we were talking about earlier with crinkling. A lot of double gauze will crinkle up a lot in the washing machine. And you just kind of have to decide, do I want it to stay crinkly or do I want to be ironing it all the time? So that would be the first thing. The next thing I will say is, don't make bias out of double gauze.
Save yourself.
Yeah, it sounds like a nightmare to me. It is a very delicate fabric. It's super, super lightweight. Double gauze is basically two layers of gauze fabric that are then bonded together with tiny little threads throughout the fabric that kind of connect those two layers. Mm-hmm. So it is the lightest, floatiest, most breathable, beautiful cloud-like fabric. It's wonderful to wear. It's beautiful, but it makes it a little bit of a pain to work with.
Yeah.
You kind of just have to understand and know that. So again, I would pick fabrics that, or pick patterns that don't have darts, you know, minimal design details, keep it really simple, and then it'll be easier to work with because you're not being so fiddly.
Yeah.
What's your experience with double gauze? You made a Donovan, didn't you?
I did. There's a blog post about it. We'll link it in the show notes. My blue double gauze Donovan. I love it. It feels like wearing like the most comfortable bedding. Like it's like walking around in a bed. It's so soft and beautiful and flowy and breathable. But I tried to make the drawstring to go with the Donovan out of the double gauze and it was so hard. It's so lofty, like it has that loft to it. So when you try and fold it into small bias binding or a drawstring or something like that, it just is such a pain to work with. So I agree. Don't make bias. Don't make a drawstring. Just stick with those simple patterns. But it is really a joy to work with.
Mm-hmm. And that tip that the Color Forest mentioned, serging the edges before you wash, that's a really, really great tip because it will kind of unravel and fray. And just be patient.
Just
love your fabric.
We'll love you back when it's done. All right. Let's talk lining. Always So Hungry says, what are good fabrics for lining? My mom and I tried to buy some once and the lady started ripping it in front of us. She said it was too crappy to use. Maybe acetate? I've also seen people talk about Bemberg. Can you talk a bit about it?
And then we also had Lullabaloo add on to this question. I second the question on lining fabrics and in particular how to combine different types of fabrics for this. For example, I have some lovely cotton voile, but it's quite sheer and I have no idea what to line it with. I'm in Australia, so I bought it hoping to make something super breezy for summer. All the lining fabrics at my store seem to be synthetic fiber. What fabrics can I use to line projects like dresses or pants and still keep them lightweight, breathable, and cool?
Great questions. I was also very confused when I first encountered Bemberg, and everyone is always like, just line it with Bemberg. I'm like, what is that? What is that? Somebody explain it to me.
So Bemberg is a rayon lining fabric that is super slippery and shiny and doesn't really look like a typical rayon. It has a very satiny look to it. It's inexpensive, which is, I think, why a lot of people use it. It's kind of a lower price point, a nice alternative to like a silk lining. And it's fairly easy to work with, easily available. So I think that's why it's popular for linings. I wouldn't use a Bemberg for everything. Personally, I'm a big fan of just lining things with cotton voile. I think cotton voile is a really good way to go, especially if it's something that you're going to be machine washing. You want to combine like with like. So line cotton with cotton voile or cotton batiste, line rayon with rayon batiste or rayon twill, line polyester with polyester. So things that you're going to be machine washing, you want to kind of stick to whatever fiber is in the shell of the garment. So like I said, my go-to linings are cotton voile. I love viscose batiste. I think it's a really, really great option for lining rayons. And then rayon Bemberg, I think, is good for like more professional trousers or skirts, things that you're going to wear to the office where you have nylons on underneath and you want like something that's a little bit more slippery, that's not going to kind of get caught. And also coats. I think bamboo is really great for lining coats.
I've also used cotton lawn for lining because it is so crisp and smooth. If you get a really high quality lawn, the fibers are so dense that it has this almost slippery feel to it. So you can totally get away with that as a lining as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can line the body of your garment with cotton and then just the sleeves with something fancy like a silk. That way you have less required, but you're still getting that slippery feel in the sleeves, which is where you really need it when you're putting something on and off like a jacket.
Mm-hmm. And silk habitat is another one that's really good for lining dresses and that kind of thing if you want a little bit of a higher end look and mm-hmm. feel. Mm-hmm.
So for this woman in Australia who has this lovely cotton voile, would you suggest she line it with cotton voile?
Yes, I would.
Excellent.
I think cotton voile is a great option. Also, it's super affordable,
yeah,
really easy to work with. I think it's a really good option.
All right, cool.
Okay, so we had quite a few requests for fabric recommendations, so we thought we'd cover those today as well. The first one is from Margot. You've mentioned that you often sew new clothes before vacation or travel. What are your favorite fabrics and patterns for travel?
Oh, it's so hard because everything's in the suitcase and it's all wrinkly and horrible.
I have to say that when I travel, and maybe this is controversial, but like I don't necessarily make garments that are good travel for travel friendly. Because I have a pretty small wardrobe. So I just wear everything that I have all the time. So I'm not necessarily considering like, oh, I'm making this for a trip. So is it going to travel well? I'm more thinking like I'm making this for a trip. So am I going to want to wear it on this trip? Is it going to be cute for this like event that I'm going to or whatever, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
That being said, I personally love knits for travel. I think that they don't wrinkle. They you know, get really small in your bag. You can kind of roll them up and you don't have to worry too much about how to care for them or ironing them or anything like that.
Yeah.
So like bamboo jersey for tees, tanks, leggings. Bamboo jersey is amazing for leggings. I think that's a really, really good option. What else? What do you think?
I mean, bringing your jeans, your denim is not going to wrinkle as much as maybe, you know, a woven pant that you've made. So I definitely think denim is a great bottom option. Denim's a great bottom. And I bring my rayon challis dresses. And you know what? They wrinkle like crazy. But if you're using one that has a really bold, crazy print, the wrinkles kind of fade into the print and you can't really tell. And I find that once it heats up being on my body, as I am a hot person, it just sort of, I like my sweat like steams out the wrinkles.
It's true. Those wrinkles really do relax once you wear the garment.
Yeah.
Another tip I have is like, if you have something that's a little bit wrinkly and you don't feel like ironing it, hang it up in the bathroom as you're showering and the steam from the shower will kind of smooth out those wrinkles a little bit.
Yeah.
I brought a linen dress to my like 4-day trip this weekend and
I wore it
every day. And even though it was like a little bit wrinkly, it didn't bother me because that's kind of the look of linen. And it did sort of relax out as I wore it.
That works well for summer, for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Next is a question from @natd104. Any tip for pants fabric that is robust enough to resist to chafing? All my pants are fragile in the inner thighs. Oof. Relatable.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely relate. I think I just mended 4 pairs of my jeans because they were all threadbare in between the thighs. That happens to me all the time.
Good for you for mending them.
Yeah. So definitely heavier twills and denims are the best for avoiding that, or at least prolonging the life of those pants in between the legs. So anything over 10 ounce, I think, is a really good bet. And don't fear heavyweight fabrics. I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. 12 ounce, 14 ounce denims, like, they are going to feel stiff when you get them, but after you wash them, they're going to soften up. And that weight, I think, is a really nice way to ensure that the jeans are just going to last longer. My other tip, and this one comes from Alina, a previous guest from Dogwood Denim. She did this in her Instagram stories and I thought it was genius. So it's basically like a patch that she adds in the inner thigh, and it adds just an extra layer of protection. So you can either attach it to the inside of your garment or even on the outside of your garment. Nobody sees that. Trust me, I know from experience because I have walked around with rips in my crotch before. Nobody notices, or at least if they do, they don't tell me. But no, I think it's a really, really great option. Even if it's a little bit visible, who really cares? It's going to add that extra layer of protection and help with chafing. I'm going to try that on my next pair of jeans and I'll share it.
Yeah, you should. Like fresh off the machine, just add the patch.
Just add the patch. Like it's like protection. It's like insurance for your crotch.
It's protection, but not that kind of protection, or the other kind of protection, but chafing protection.
Chafing protection, yeah.
All right. L. Whitaker Studio says, I would love your recommendations for a natural, breathable fiber that doesn't need ironing and washes well. Wow. Me too. Is this some kind of unicorn fabric, or is polyester and sweating like a woman in a plastic bag really the only option? What are your favorite wearable fabrics? With four kids, I have my hands and ironing basket full, and I'm at a stage in my life where, for me, comfortable, easy clothing is key. Unicorn fabric.
I wish there was a unicorn fabric that was beautiful and breathable and natural and biodegradable and also didn't wrinkle, easy to care for. I mean, it just doesn't exist.
It doesn't, unfortunately. But, you know, we say this on the show all the time. Our favorite fabric is linen. Embrace the wrinkles. Just go with it. It's so fun. You're wearing a linen jumpsuit right now. Honestly,
I didn't iron this.
It's wrinkly as all. Well, it's actually not really.
It's not that bad. This is the wash linen.
It has wrinkles, but people don't see wrinkles as much as you think they see wrinkles.
Yeah. And like we said earlier, the wrinkles do relax as you wear them. I don't know. I mean, I just think that it's not as big of a deal as people think it is to have slightly wrinkly things. I mean, I get it. Like a linen shirt, like my linen Cali shirt, I can't just take it out of the wash and wear it. Like I have to at least iron the collar area and like the cuffs on the sleeves. Yeah. Same thing with my Wixton shift dress that I made recently out of washed linen. I kind of do like a cheater iron. Like I take it out of the wash and hang it up right away so that it's not like sitting in a pile of laundry that needs to be folded. Like put it on a hanger right as it comes out of the dryer. And then I go to my ironing board and I just swoop across like the hem so that the hem looks a little bit crisp. And then the sleeves, like the armhole cuff areas, you know, like the end of the sleeves and then the neckline. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it gives the illusion that it's completely ironed, but it's not. You still kind of retain that sort of, I don't know, soft, like washed linen look without having to iron the whole thing so that it's crisp, because that's just not sustainable. Who has time for that? I don't.
Not with four kids.
Yeah, not with four kids.
I like your other tip here about knits being a good option. They're easy to care for. They wrinkle a lot less. And you can make some more dressy pieces out of knits. You could try the cashmere at Appleton dress. It's a beautiful knit dress. And there's lots of options out there if you want to make something that doesn't look like a t-shirt and leggings, but does have the benefit of being made out of a knit.
Yeah. And I also really love what you and Sam do with your laundry. This isn't something that I do, but you guys always have like laundry hanging on hangers on your patio, kind of like just drying naturally instead of putting it through the dryer. And I feel like that's a really great way to avoid having to iron things, because the fabric, if you're hanging it up when it's wet, as it dries, it's going to kind of like relax and smooth out from just like drying slowly. And then you're not worrying about pulling it out of a big pile of dry laundry on your floor. Like
especially with
it's all wrinkly.
Button ups or anything like with pockets on the chest or pockets on the back of your pants, if they have like a flap that can get all like wrinkled and shrunken and misshapen in the dryer, right? But if you hang things up to dry, you can sort of hand press the collars and those other areas like the cuffs. You can fold everything where it should be folded, straighten everything out, and then it will dry that way. Mm-hmm. It just needs a little bit of guidance.
Yeah, but really at the end of the day, there is no miracle unicorn fabric. I think all fabrics have their pros and cons, and you just have to find the fabric that you love the most and that you think is like worth the few cons that it has.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Sewing for the Weekend says, I want to know, what is an ITY polyester knit? I'm trying to find a knit to use to sew up thigh savers or shorts to wear under dresses, and I can't find the perfect fabric for the job. Is ITY poly a good choice? I want something slippery so dresses will drape properly and thin so it's not too bulky.
ITY is not my favorite fabric. I don't work with it, so I can't really speak to whether or not it's good for what you're describing, the sort of short bike short thigh saver kind of style garment. But I will say bamboo jersey.
Yeah.
All the way.
I agree. I have bamboo jersey thigh saver shorts that I buy from Blue Sky Clothing. We can link that in the show notes. They have a nice big size range, which is awesome. And they're great. And they totally last and they don't pill too much. And I find that they are slippery enough for those fabrics so they don't get caught up on it. I don't think that ITY, which stands for interlock twist yarn, because it's polyester, I don't think that that would be a good choice. It's not going to breathe. It's not going to be super healthy for you to be wearing something like that that doesn't breathe. So I would recommend something that is a more natural fiber. Mm-hmm. Merino jersey would be a good choice. My assistant made a pair of thigh saver shorts out of a merino jersey recently and she loves them. Ooh. They're just so nice and breathable. That's an excellent fabric for undies or anything that you're wearing really close to your skin.
Awesome. Yeah. That's a really good tip. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
I just swear by bamboo, but
you know. Well, merino jersey is a little bit of a higher price point and you don't come across it as often when you're shopping online. So I feel like people don't use it as much, but it's a beautiful fabric.
But thigh savers only take like a half meter.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's perfect. Splurge on the merino.
Yeah.
So we also got a lot of questions about quilting cotton. This one is from Kimberly Rue Sews. I'm always tempted to use quilting cotton because it comes in such cute prints. Do you guys have any pattern recommendations that are quilting cotton friendly?
This is a great question, and it's totally normal to start out your sewing journey or even as an advanced sewist want to use quilting cotton because they do come in all those fun colors and there can be some really amazing high quality fabrics available at quilting shops or in the quilting cotton section. So you don't have to never use these fabrics. It's not a hard and fast rule. Most designers won't recommend them because they're a little bit stiffer. They tend to be a little bit thicker. So for a lot of designs, they're going to give you more structure than maybe the designer intended, but that can work in your favor in some cases. So the Ashton that I just released is actually great with quilting cotton. It works quite well. You could do that fun print and it's also a smaller garment, so it doesn't overwhelm you. If you do a head-to-toe novelty print, sometimes, you know, the idea of that can be better than the reality of that. So I like just playing with like a little bit of a novelty print. Mm-hmm. Again, the Willow from Grainline is another great little woven tank. The Leela skirt from So DIY, she just re-released this one, is a great option. The Donovan skirt as well. The Hollyburn skirt is an A-line option. I made one of those with an Arrows quilting cotton. Mm-hmm. We'll link that in the show notes. And that really holds its shape really well. So that works. The new Closet Case Fiore skirt, I think you could do in quilting cotton. Even the cello top in that collection as well, you could probably get away with a quilting cotton. And then if you want to go for more of a vintage look, that's where some of those novelty prints can really shine. So you could do a full-on collared shirt dress in a beautiful novelty print and use a more vintage style pattern like the Colette Hawthorne dress, for example. And that would give you just a statement piece.
Yeah. I think just keeping in mind that a quilting cotton, like a lot of quilting fabrics have a smaller scale in the prints. So it's going to give you a different look. It's not necessarily going to give you like a ready to wear look, but if you love the print and it's going to make you really happy wearing it, then totally use quilting cotton. You know, yeah. The world is your oyster. You are a sewist and you can do whatever you want.
And not all quilting cottons are the same. Some of them are thicker than others. So keep that in mind when you're looking as well. You can come across some really nice, super densely woven, very lightweight quilting cottons.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Our next section is about knits. And we want to remind you that we did a whole episode about sewing with knits. So if you're into sewing with knits right now and you have some more questions, that would be a great place to get some more information. But our first question is from Guile. Hi, Guile. I want to make a t-shirt. The knits that I have available in the shops around me are 95% cotton and 5% spandex. That feels much too spandexy for a t-shirt. What are the best kinds of fabric for t-shirts? I know people all have so many different tastes and that's why there are so many kinds of t-shirts out there, but I want a t-shirt that hangs nicely, breathes well, and is not too stretchy. I feel like 5% spandex is a little too stretchy and potentially too warm. Interesting.
Yeah, this is a really good question, Guile. And we did get a few questions about this. Like, what is the right fabric to use for a t-shirt? And like you said, I think everybody has different needs and wants and tastes in terms of what their perfect t-shirt looks like. So it will be different for everyone. I will say that 95% cotton, 5% spandex is a really classic blend for knits. I think 5 to 6% spandex is very normal for knits. That's where you're looking at like a t-shirt knit. I think the legging bamboo fabric that I love, the bamboo jersey, is like 7% spandex maybe. And then when you're getting into like 15 to 20% spandex, that's like swimwear, athletic wear. So anywhere from like the 4 to 7% spandex, that's really going to be good for t-shirts. If you don't want any spandex in your fabric, then go with 100% cotton jersey. I think that's a really great classic t-shirt look. Just know that the recovery on that fabric is going to be not so great. So you want to pick a t-shirt pattern that has maybe a little bit more of a relaxed fit, so you're not worrying so much about things bagging out over time. What's your favorite fabric for t-shirts?
I mean, we've said it so many times this episode, but it's bamboo jersey because I do find that it lasts a long time without pilling. It just hangs really nicely on my body. It's not clingy, but it's also not too loose or drapey. I've just found that it works really well in all different t-shirt patterns that I've used it for. But I've also really enjoyed working with linen t-shirt fabrics before. They're a little bit harder to find, but when I do get my hands on them, they're just so nice to wear. They're very breathable and they feel, you know, a little bit more elevated. So I enjoy that. And then there was a poly blend that you had in your shop a little while back that I didn't think I would like as much as I do, but it does have more of a classic tee feel. It's not as drapey as the bamboo jersey, so it has a little bit more structure to it. But I think it just comes down to what you like and your hand, the hand feel when you're shopping.
Yeah, I would also say going to like ready-to-wear shops and looking at the fiber content of t-shirts that you actually do like the look of would be a nice place to start to sort of figure out the blend that you like, because there's just so many different blends out there. It can be hard to decide what to go with. So if you start somewhere and kind of figure out what you like in a ready-to-wear t-shirt, that might help you. And then we kind of have a related question from Small Fat Adjustments. I have a knit with really low recovery. What can I use with it? So this is a really common question, especially at Blackford, because we are carrying some 100% cotton jerseys that have low recoveries. They're really beautiful because they're organic cotton. But what do you make with it when you have that lower recovery fabric? My best favorite pattern for that is Penny Raglan, because it's a nice, loose, boxy fit. I think it lends itself really well to 100% cotton. Oh, I love this tip that you added.
Yeah, I always think when I have those knit fabrics that don't have any stretch to them, that it would be fun to make a woven pattern with that knit. So you could make some of the patterns that we were just talking about, like a Lou Box top or an Ashton top, making something that's intended for wovens, but making it out of a knit. So you get the benefit of that super comfortable, breathable, organic cotton knit, but you get that woven design.
Yeah. So in short, don't make a bodysuit or a pair of leggings. Yeah.
Anything that's oversized would be fun for your low recovery knit.
Mm-hmm. All right. So our last little section of questions is a little bit random, so I put them at the end. But the first one is from Ali Du Sews. What kinds of affordable fabrics should I look for to make muslins for stretch jeans patterns or swimsuits? These seem like they require fabrics that are very unique with unique stretch percentages, so I wonder if there's an option for making muslins with a more affordable fabric than the fashion fabric I choose for the final product.
Great question.
This is a really great question. And it's one of those ones where I don't think I have like a miracle solution to it. And I have a little bit of a controversial opinion on the subject. And that is to make a muslin in the same fabric that you're going to use for the final garment.
I thought you were going to say don't make a muslin. So
I guess it's kind of the same as not making a muslin.
Because you're just giving it a try. You're giving it a go, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And maybe that garment is going to fit and it's going to end up being a wearable muslin. But at the end of the day, you're right. Those fabrics are so unique. If you're making a pair of ginger jeans in stretch denims come in so many different forms with so many different, you know, stretch percentages. So it's really, really hard to kind of match that in a muslin. You can make a muslin in a different fabric and kind of get an idea of the fit in terms of like the crotch area and kind of see how it looks and make some preliminary adjustments. But really, like, especially for jeans, you want to make those final adjustments in the final fabric, because every denim is so different. And that's one reason to add a little bit of extra seam allowance along your side seam. So maybe have an inch of seam allowance along the side seam and then baste the side seam together, try it on, and then make those adjustments along the side seam. At the end of the day, swimsuits only take a meter of fabric, jeans maybe 1.5 to 2 meters of fabric. So we're not talking 5 meters of fabric. It's a slightly smaller quantity. So I think just to ensure that you're going to get the look that you want, I think it's worth it to spend a little bit more and use that same fabric for your muslin.
I agree. All right. Cake and Cynicism wants to know, can you sew a woven pattern with stretch fabric? I got some lovely stretch corduroy from Blackbird that I want to make into shorts. I have a pattern, but it's for wovens. Well, the corduroy that you have, if it's the one I'm thinking of, is a woven fabric that has stretch in it. So it's not a full-on knit. So I think you can get away with using that for a woven pattern. I used that fabric, in fact, to make a York pinafore, which is intended for wovens. And I didn't make any adjustments. I didn't size down because it is a little bit of an oversized pattern. I just made it as is. And it's nice to have that stretch when I sit down or bend over because it does stretch around my body. But other than that, I don't really notice too much of a difference because that one does have a really nice recovery.
Mm-hmm. You can use a stretch woven fabric for a pattern that requires non-stretch fabrics. You just might want to size down depending on the type of garment. So if it is a form-fitting garment, a tighter garment, then you probably want to size down because it's just going to stretch out a little bit too much. And you don't need that extra ease that the designer would have put in there for the fact that he or she is suggesting just a regular woven fabric without stretch in it.
Yeah, exactly. For the case of the shorts, you're going to have a waistband. And if you make that waistband out of a stretch fabric, then it might stretch a little bit more and then it won't fit perfectly on your waist anymore. But you can do things like interface that fabric really thoroughly, or maybe you sew in some cotton into your waistband so it's preventing it from stretching completely. So you can take precautionary measures.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last question of the day. Ooh. Steph Lind wants to know, how do you tell the front from the back on a non-printed woven fabric? Just pick one side and keep it consistent throughout your project?
Yeah. In fact, if you can't tell the difference, you don't even have to be consistent, but you do have to make sure that you're putting the right pieces together. And that can get tricky when you can't tell your right and wrong side.
True story.
But yeah, you're always telling me this because whenever we sew together, I'm like, Caroline, what's the right and wrong side of this fabric? My resident fabric expert. And you always say, if you can't tell, then who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you, let's say, a fabric looks different on the right and wrong side, but you don't know what the right side is. Like you don't know which one should be right side out. You can try to do a little bit of research. So if it's a twill, then maybe look online and look at what a twill should look like. And then you want to use that side that looks like a twill. So for the twill example, those kind of lines are going to be diagonal. The sort of ribs of the twill are going to be running diagonal. That's the right side. And the back side of a twill doesn't have that. But if you don't know what the right and wrong side is, that's fine. Just pick a side.
And pick a side already.
You know, pick your favorite side and use it. And sometimes you can use the wrong side of the fabric on the outside, even if you know it's the wrong side, if you just like it better, as long as it's not going to snag or have any like loose threads maybe in the weave, then yeah, totally. You can make your own rules.
So that wraps up our fabric Q&A. Don't worry about the right answer. Just make your own rules. But the grain line does matter. That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. Make sure you check out the Fiber Arts Retreats happening at the Holy Cross Monastery in May of 2020. Visit holycrossmonastery.com/events/fiber for more info.
Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please leave us a review. It really helps other sewists discover us.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're loving the show and want to help us out, maybe you want to hear more about what we're sewing this month, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
You can find me, Helen, at helenscloset.ca. All my patterns are on sale this week. And you can find Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com. Sign up for one of her workshops. And our show is produced by Sam Humphrey.
Thank you, Sam.
And thank you all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye. The ice in the straws. No.